Beyond. Broadcast through the Wolfspirit Media Network. Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond. Please join us in the chat room at www.wolfspiritradio.com/listen. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.
You are indeed listening to Wolf Spirit Radio. It is the 23rd of... it's not the 23rd. It's nearly the 23rd. It's the 22nd of October at 2300. So it's 22:23 on my clock. Yeah, that's getting your computer. It's 2017. Yes. God, who'd have thought, who'd have thought we'd be still alive in 2017. In a way, we're lucky to have survived this far because, a lot of people have, just think about all the people that that have kind of just passed away in the last year or so. Not just famous people, but people all around us, families, members, friends of families, all dying. Very interesting. So here we are, surviving. Tonight, a survivor, Michael Graham, returns to Ever Beyond from the East Coast. How's things?
Hi, JP. Hi, everybody. Hi. Thanks again for having me on. I'm a total fan of your show, and I just appreciate the work you're doing and all the interesting people you bring on for the education and enlightenment of the masses. Here on the East Coast, things are good. It's sort of the energy is rather stable. Feels kind of like a calm before the storm kind of energy. But there's much foreboding and consternation about what's going to happen in November and that sort of stuff. But for the most part, we're, as you say, surviving. Yeah.
And at some point, there's going to be a thrival, but it feels like we're kind of squeezing through the bottleneck, and maybe we have to take the clothes off, to get through this thing. But still, we'd be on the other side, cleansed and refreshed in some way. So you recently sent me a message on Facebook and said, yeah, I've had this thing, I've had these dreams about volcanoes and stuff. And I said, why don't you come on the show and talk about it? So let's start there, shall we? Because it's very much a kind of ever beyond kind of subject. The idea of the future is already existent, and some people can see it, and some people get to see it in dreams. We have deja vus. I have personally had deja vus that I only remember because I remember I had a dream about that, but I don't remember the dream itself. I might have a dream in 1987, and it'll be the scene that I've just experienced in my 3D life. Very strange. It was like when you go to a movie and you see these still frames in the poster for the movie. Oh, you used to. It was the feeling of going through that frame. Oh yeah, I remember this frame. I was outside when I was standing outside. You remember looking at that frame on the poster, and then you go through the movie, and it's kind of a bit like that feeling. So you had a dream. Tell us about the dream.
Well, I mean, to comment on your statement about the future is already set. There are several schools of thought about reality and the quote unquote matrix we live in, and how we interact with the stream of time. At this dimension, anyway, ideas about every choice that you'll ever make has already been made and is set for you, and your consciousness is sort of experiencing a map of creation, not only in terms of matter, but in terms of timeline. So, you know, there's something to be said about seeing the future according to certain timelines based on decision points or likely decision points, probability charts, that sort of stuff. You know, some people have access to that. Some people are given access to it. They're shown a window in time for multiple reasons. I typically, now what's unusual for me is I have an agreement with my guides. I'm like, you know what, I want to experience the here and now for the most part, and only show me future stuff is what I call it, when I need to see it or when it's important. And around the time that I had this dream, I had been changing my sleep pattern, essentially trying to get more sleep. But also doing a lot of meditating on some of the higher divinities and higher consciousness and that sort of stuff. And I've had several prophetic dreams, like one after another during that period. But one that jumped out at me, I had a very lucid dream about volcanoes going off in the distance in sort of an island lush background. And I could see the volcano very clearly. I could see that the volcano started to spew ash. And I thought, this is a strange dream. I don't know where there's a volcano. Also, the setting didn't seem like anywhere that I'm familiar with, certainly not a city. But with the setting of the dream, or the sequence of the dream, was pretty much, you know, the volcano started to become active. Everyone was shocked. The authorities were telling people, don't worry, it's not going to be as bad. You know, it's just a minor awakening. But the presence in the dream, you know how sometimes there are the voices of the people in the dream, and then there's a voice of that knowing that, like, the dream itself is giving you a message. The presence within the dream was saying, no, it's going to be worse than they thought. It's not going to erupt, but it's definitely going to put forth a lot of ash into the air, and people need to evacuate because that ash is going to end up being pervasive and toxic and poisonous. You know, I thought, okay, well, that's... You know, woke up thinking, well, that's interesting, and started to pay attention, because I know when I get these dreams, it means something that's more than just a dream. So surely enough, 2 days later, there was the story of the volcano going off in Bali, and pretty much progressing along the same sequence as the dream said. You know, it started to wake up, and then it started to put forth ash. The dream pretty much said, it's going to spew forth ash, and then people are going to sort of become complacent, and then it's going to spew forth more ash, and then by the time, you know, it gets to a certain point, people are going to be trapped in this ash cloud and so on and so forth. And according to the news reports, it more or less kind of happened that way, where it became active, it put out a lot of ash, people were worried, but they weren't really moving, and then it started to put out a lot more ash, and then it started to evacuate, and it has yet to erupt, as far as I can tell. But what's interesting, around the same time, almost exactly the same time, there were two other volcanoes that were doing the same thing in the region. There was another one that went off in Indonesia and another one that went off, I think, in Malta. I'm not really sure. In this particular case, you know, here I am having a prophetic dream, and I'm thinking to myself, I don't know. What do I do? I'm not in Bali. I'm in New Jersey. You know, I can't. So I, you know, I told a few people and I started to pay attention. You know, I've been watching the news and thank God it hasn't, at least the one in Bali hasn't erupted. So, yeah, we'll see, you know, in terms of, reading the matrix ahead of time, that was a definite instance. There are a couple other things that went on, for me in terms of dreams after that, but that was probably the most profound. I'm still a little, I'm still querying my guides as to why. I'm getting some insights as to why they showed me that dream. But, you know, that for me is
that is the question that comes to me, is like, why you and why that? Like you say, you're kind of on the opposite side of the globe. Why would you know about that? Do you have relatives there? Do you have friends there?
Absolutely no relatives.
Had a past life there?
That may be the answer to the question. I think, based on the back and forth that I've been getting with, you know, my team on the other side, because of timing, because obviously we're all earthlings connected to earth events and earth consciousness, and I, I've, you know, made a pledge to help humanity to move into the next iteration of the evolutionary state we're supposed to be in and protect the Earth, help the Earth as much as possible. Although I try to keep it on the down low. I think it was a confirmation of the work that I've been doing, showing me here's another significant event that is going to happen that we're letting you know ahead of time because you've actually been doing the work to prepare yourself to be open to receiving messages about this kind of thing. Other than that, you know, I knew a few people that were in Bali at the same time, and I told them, I sort of gave them a heads up. I'm like, hey, listen, there's this thing going on, and they're able to make it out, I think, fine. They weren't too bothered by it. Yeah.
So. Interesting. Well, maybe a friend of their friends moved out, and one day they'll save the world, you know. You never know. You know, stuff like that happens all the time. So, prophetic dreams, tapping in. Now, tell me, Michael, when you had the dream and when the event happened, what was the time gap?
2 days. It happened 2 days before the volcano went off. And, the very next day, and I'll tell you, the next day I reached out to a friend of mine, who had just gotten to Bali. You know, what happens sometimes, I'll tell you from a slightly different perspective, I work a lot with the angels and the archangels and a lot of different divinities. And I know over time, based on my experience, what happens is, you know, angelic beings like to work through human beings to get most of their stuff done for multiple reasons. And I suspect what has happened, because this happened before, where somebody will be praying or will be needing something, and then I will be informed, hey, you need to do this thing. And I'll show up, and I'll do the thing, and the person will be like, oh, my God, I literally was just praying about that, or I was asking for help in that particular area, right? And a lot of people who are spiritual or even religious can report stories like that. And I believe the warning that I got had something to do with the people that I won't mention, I won't talk about, who were in Bali at the time that probably needed a heads up, and perhaps some other aspect of the consciousness of the people who needed someone to pray on behalf of them to help thwart any kind of major eruption that might be happening. Because of course, when I saw the dream, I started immediately connecting with divinities and trying to subdue the intensity. I mean, the planet's been hit a lot right now with the Earth upheavals. And so I try to do my part, trying to calm Mother Earth down.
Magnetic waves, from what I can see, is that if there's a large magnetic body in the solar system and every day we rotate, and at some point that which rotates is attracted to the, the point on the lump on the Earth where it's more iron than more flexible iron, like liquid, that you'd expect it to kind of be drawn upwards. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I was talking with, a lot of people disagree. So a lot of people disagree that there's another planet in our solar system that is kind of passing through. What's your view on that, Michael?
There is, that long-standing story about the passage of Nibiru around this time. There's a lot of talk about the forthcoming planet. I don't know. I'm not convinced that Nibiru is where people think it is. Now, that being said, there are other planetary bodies that are approaching us, and there's this mysterious planet X that everybody, including astronomers, are trying to find. Planet 9, I think they're calling it, that's outside the Kuiper Belt and wobbling Pluto and a couple other bodies. And of course there's the, there was around, I think in 2003, Nancy Leader, I believe, one of the leaders of, she was a leader of a Zeta Talk.
Zeta Talk, yes.
Right, right. She sort of created this whole planet X. Nibiru is going to come in and destroy the Earth, and we're going to have climate upheavals and that sort of thing. But according to what I've researched, Sitchin never said that, which is, Sitchin being Zachariah Sitchin, the guy who sort of reignited the discussions around the return of Nibiru. He never really talked about the planet coming at that time. According to him, he thinks it's going to show up around 2900, and there was an actual discussion between him and official members of the astronomy board. I think, I don't know the name, but they're affiliated with NASA. And they actually both sat down and discussed, there's a video where the corroboration was made, where these astronomers were tracking a body, and based on their evidence, have been tracking for 12 years. And they think that there's going to be a relatively large planet passing through, but they think it's going to happen around 2900, and sort of corroborated Sitchin's calculations at around 2900. I mean, when I say 2900, I mean the year 2900. That being said, there are planetary upheavals going on in our solar system. I mean, you know, Jupiter lost its spot. Mars has been going through global warming, quote-unquote, you know, climate change. Ice has been found in places where there's not supposed to be ice, and this is happening throughout the solar system. Now, I believe that probably has more to do with the changes happening to the sun, where the sun has been producing a lot of electromagnetic pulses, and that, of course, changes and warps the EM field around us, the planet, and bends and twists things around. Of course, that's going to create crustal upheavals and create other, and of course, the sun dictates how the very frequencies of all the planets in the solar system, because she's a great mother father of everybody sort of swinging around her. So if she's sending out pulses and you know, superluminal light particles that hit the core of the planet, and you know, some people say these are messages, these are sun codes that are going out and saying, hey, wake up, time to step up to your next level, which is why we're talking about this great shift in consciousness right now, where even the planets are ascending, right? And of course, there's that incoming gas cloud, that intergalactic gas cloud that a lot of the Russian scientists and even NASA have discussed, that's sort of breaching our space, that is causing shifts. So there's a lot of stuff going on. I'm not sure, you know, Nibiru is to blame for this.
Well, plasma could be magnetic too.
Precisely. Yes.
I've been talking a lot about the plasma ball theory of everything. Mm-hmm. You know, the idea that eventually the light inside our own bodies will light up our aura, and that's what they talk about being a light being, and that's what happens to a planet. For instance, like Venus or Saturn, where the light from the plasma globe inside is starting to come out into the atmosphere.
Hmm, interesting. Yeah, well, I mean, you know, inside each planet, according to, I think not only Bruce Lipton, but to an extent, Nassim Harriman, there's a black hole, right, which, supposedly sucks everything in. But according to recent, discoveries, the black hole, and according to Harriman's theories, the black hole actually is a proton and atomic generator, meaning it creates matter, or I actually think what it does is acts as a portal for matter to come in from other places into our reality.
Yeah, that's more what I feel.
Yeah, and so as it creates this matter inside our planet, the planet has no choice but to grow and get bigger. But also, as it creates more of these protons and brings in more of this light, things in and around our vicinity get more consistent light to bathe in, or to absorb, or to utilize. And so we naturally, I believe, give off more light, because we're light beings. We've got biophotonic energy that goes off. It's very, very subtle, but it's recordable. Obviously, Carillion photography and other medical facilities have recorded the light body to a different extent. And I think as the increase in the frequency continues to happen, as we evolve, we will start to glow. I mean, anything that vibrates fast enough starts to emit a light, right? And so I think I agree with you. You know, whatever's happening to Venus is happening to Mars, is happening not only to the planets, but it's happening to the very cells of us human beings as we're about to step into that grand leap of evolution to become, what was that, Homo luminous or Homo superior, where we essentially give off more light. That's a whole other.
Well,
it's a whole other theory.
This is, well, it's all part of the conversation today, because at the beginning of our shows, we had Adrius talking about the meditation, which is simply imagining a star at your heart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this has been on my mind all week. I've been talking about it. I've been talking about it every show. It's all about plasma, guys. It's all about plasma. It's all the same. The star in your heart, when you become initiated, starts to shine through. Yes. There's that, and that's also why in Stargate, because they have the light in the head that lights up the back of the eyeballs, the Goa'uld, right? They shine from inside, but that's because they're a parasite. They don't shine from the heart. But the idea of becoming more and more transparent as you lose your shadow self. Shining more and more, and eventually burning up all the shadow self to become a very transparent vehicle for the star that is inside you. And you light up the clouds that, as of your aura. Sounds lovely.
There's a lot of documentation, be it sacred texts, historical documentation, that talks about the body being made of light. Sophianic mysteries talk about the form of man originally coming forth in such brilliance that the beings around him couldn't perceive him. You've heard about the rainbow bodies of Padmasambhava and a lot of these Tibetan and Indian yogis who disappear into light and then reappear into light. Mahababaji does this. Lahiri Mahasaya does this. A lot of beings actually go into a light body, which is our natural state. You know, to quote the great Yoda, luminous beings we are, not this gross material, right? And so we are actually on a higher level light beings. And there is a school of thought that mentions that a lot of the stars that we look at in the sky are actually the souls of ancestors. I know, according to some of the Rudolf Steiner material, the great Zoroaster, or forgive me, it could be Ahura Mazda, but his heart chakra is our sun. Literally, when you look at the sun, you're looking at the heart of the cosmic being, Ahura Mazda. And so you talk, you know, when Adrius, I never listened to that show prior to this one. I was busy. but it's interesting, you know, synchronistically, he's talking about imagining a star in your heart. And yeah, there are systems of thought and belief that say that, you know, once you get to a certain state of evolution, your heart becomes a star, literally. So yeah, it's interesting.
And that's what I'm feeling, that this is what the ascension process is the sparking of that star. And, you know, that becomes more than one or two atoms, but becomes quite a few atoms. It's very interesting because, we were also talking about the plasma globe, earlier on in the show, and, Angelica had, she was describing it, and she says the bit in the middle, looks like it's black. Looks like it was carbon granules or something like that. So it's interesting to say there's a black hole there, and then the lightning comes off that. And that, the lightning goes all the way through the glass to the surface. One of her friends held a coin against it and got quite a shock. Yeah, so that, you know, the glass is not going to insulate you from the plasma.
Right. I mean, there's dark matter. Well, actually, you know, there was an article recently that came out, and I hesitate to quote it because I don't remember all the details, but there's an article that came out that said much of the matter of the universe that people thought didn't exist has been discovered. Apparently it exists outside or in the spaces between the galaxies. And if you think about it, I think there's a correlation between quote unquote dark matter that's you know in and around and nobody that makes up 90% of the visible universe and some of this missing matter. And I actually you know, again, this is not scientific. You know, I sort of waffle going between. I have an interest in science and the provable and evidence based stuff, but I also have a lot of I lend a lot of credence to intuitive information, and I like to bridge the two. So my intuition, honestly, I think the dark matter that we cannot see, I believe this dark matter is actually light that's at such a high frequency that we are unable to detect it neither with our eyes nor with our instruments. And I'll say why. Because once you go into higher realms, for those who can travel out of the body and go into the higher realms, the realms are bathed in light. There is no darkness. Well, depending on which level you go to, there is no darkness there. Everything is light. Everything is, there is no shadow. There are no shadows behind, anything because, light is pervasive. Now, if according to, you know, Hermetic theory as above, so below and polarity and all that stuff and the dimensions, as you go down, they're just, you know, things vibrating lower and lower and it becomes more and more dense. For me, if at this level we're not seeing the majority of matter, if we go to a higher level, the matter is still there, but it's just you can perceive it in a different way. I think the matter that we're not seeing is actually the light in those higher realms. I mean, it's kind of a stretch, but that's a theory I'm working on.
Well, you know, I believe in the octave theory of matter. Everything occurs in octaves, you know,
right.
And as you go up in octaves and harmonics, you get different forms of matter, like you get different forms of geometry. You know, you might start off with a triangle and a tetrahedron, and then it builds up into a double tetrahedron, and they all stack upon each other and make marvelously solid things.
Exactly.
And but it's all repeating patterns.
Right.
So that's
right. And you talk about cymatics, which is a favorite topic. Well, a favorite go-to for me when I try to explain how everything is related, and sound, or at least frequency, it has a representation in every dimension, sound and light and shape. You know, you have cymatics I'm sure you know what cymatics is, right, JP? That's the...
Yeah, but not everybody who's listening does. So why don't we take them, imagine people. Michael, go ahead.
Sure. Well, obviously I'm not an expert, but the idea is if you expose particles to a frequency, they will adopt a particular shape depending on the frequency or a pattern depending on the frequency that they're exposed to. And the way people do that is one of the most common ways is they put sand on a metal plate, and then they attach the metal plate to a sound generator, and they modulate the frequencies from low to high. And there are lots of videos on YouTube about this, where they'll throw the sand or rice or whatever, on this plate. And at lower frequencies, you'll literally see the particles spontaneously snap into a pattern, simpler patterns. Again, at lower frequencies, squares, diamonds, you know, stuff like that. And as the frequency increases, the patterns become more and more complex, increasingly complex. Just like you said, you know, you have your geometric shapes and then they build on each other. And I believe there's that one particular frequency where you could literally see that popular flower of life mandala that Glenville Melchizedek did a lot of work discussing and describing as it shows up all over the world. I failed to remember what the actual frequency was. That'd be something important to know. But if you can imagine particles suspended and just sitting on a plate, snapping into a particular pattern based on a frequency, if you expose your body to the same frequency, talking about, you know, Emoto's work where he exposes water molecules to frequency, and then he flash freezes them so that you can trap the frequency, and you'll see the same patterns or similar patterns showing up in the water molecules. So if you can imagine what happens in your own consciousness when you expose yourself to different frequencies, right? What happens to your mind, which is really just your brain, which is really just an antenna for your consciousness, your mind, when you're exposed or when you're sitting in a particular frequency field. And then we can take that back to the sun, which sends bursts of these electromagnetic particles that vibrate at a particular frequency that bathe the earth. And what happens to all the particles within the earth when they're exposed to these spikes in, electromagnetic particles and frequencies? What happens to us? And for how long do we maintain the state of altered state? I know a lot of people around the time of solar flares. In fact, I have an app just to track it. Whenever a solar flare goes off, there are people who literally lose their mind. Like, they will go crazy for the period of time that we're bathed by these particles, which is about 2 to 3 days after a solar flare goes off, right? And all kind of crazy things happen. So are we being prepared? Are we being prepped, prodded, you know, one spike at a time to move up and keep moving up and moving up? I think there's something to it. I do.
Well, you know, I think we're being, the frequencies are being played on us, and these patterns, maybe I should share my screen with you, what I'm looking at here, and so that you can see that I'm demonstrating the... There we go. Can you see that?
I see something happening.
A whole bunch of chymatics.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, I can see. Yeah, yeah. There we go. Those are those beautiful patterns. That's amazing.
Yeah, so I just posted those in the chat room.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
That's it. So we are being liquefied and reformed like the sand particles in these chymatics with sound waves that are so, so low that we can't hear them or even feel them, but they're happening. Like if you were in a boat and it was on a wave that had, like, 90-foot waves, you'd move up and down pretty slowly, but it would be a lot of movement. But it would be slow. And so this is how I, personally, how I've been feeling the last few weeks, is that I'm on a boat on an invisible sea, and I'm feeling seasick. It's feeling a bit better now, actually, to be honest. It's passed a bit.
Interesting. You know, we're sitting in the middle of a frequency, I will use the word playground, because I don't want to invoke a negative terminology, where there are a lot of things that are generating frequencies that we're being bathed in. It's not just the sun. And, of course, the earth sends forth its own frequencies. Humanity collectively has its own frequencies. But there are players that have the ability to manipulate the frequencies we exist in. And they, sometimes they don't particularly care about the people that are exposed to frequencies that they're launching from one place to another for their own purposes. And sometimes people, I've heard of people having that same reaction where they feel seasick, they feel nauseous, or they feel a little out of time and place because of some of these things that are happening. And of course, we talk about these weird, very strange weather patterns that in some cases have a very deliberate path, and in other cases they're just strange and random. Some of these weather anomalies that are happening are as a result of frequency manipulation by these said players. So I don't know how much of what you're talking about. Do you have an idea why you think you're feeling the way you were last week?
Well, I feel that there are gravitational waves that are moving through us. but that we don't have a, you know, how can I say it? If you smell something bad, you know it because your smell is telling you that it's something bad.
Right.
But if you have no experience of experiencing a sensorium like your nose, then how do you know what it is that you're smelling? Or if you see what I mean, that's like, it's on such a different frequency band that nobody even realizes that it's happening because we're all being sloshed about together. But that if you sit still enough, you can feel the whole boat swishing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sitting here at my control panel here with all the mixing desks, I have to sit very still sometimes. And, so you feel this, you can feel it. It's like you're feeling the spin of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just imagine you're standing looking at the, sun and then just remember that you're moving towards the east at 1,000 miles an hour. It's quite disorienting to actually, because you feel it then. You watch the stars going by and you think that, right, that's 1,000 miles an hour, but you can't really see it, but you can almost see it, you know. You see the way the sun moves, it's the width of its disc, you know. You see the first little bit and then you see the end of it and it's a few minutes, but you can see it moving. So, yes. Let's hope everybody's not swishing about and feeling seasick now. Because it's like being able to connect with frequency bands that we don't normally connect to, having senses that we don't normally sense. You know, for instance, does anybody ever feel the feeling of the hairs on their back of the neck, except at times of distress? You know, your hair tells you things, doesn't it?
Yes. Well, I mean, you know, there are lots of, stimulus playing on our physical bodies and on our energy bodies, almost all the time, very often. You know, just to take it in a slightly different direction, but to play off of what you just said, very often when I work with clients, one of the things I do, is I will, you know, in a session, a reading session, I will look at the guides that are there for that particular person. You know, and often I start off looking for their angelic companions. Everybody's got angels, at least two. And so,
you'll find mine, they're over in the bar.
Yeah, they're playing.
Smoking and playing pool. They've given up.
No, they never give up. They're always, in fact, you know, we're far more guided on a regular basis than we realize. And my point really was this. When I see these beings and they interact with my clients, some clients have a very close relationship with their angels. They don't even know because, you know, they interact with us in ways that we've always known, we've come accustomed to, we've written off as a particular kind of experience. We've given it a name, but what it is, it's something far more profound than what we realize. Now, I'll tell you, for example, many times I've seen, an angelic being or spirit guide, sometimes an ancestor, will come and they will lay a hand on the shoulder or they'll gently brush the face or they'll whisper in the ear or they'll kiss the forehead, something like that. You know, this is happening on the higher realms, right, as I'm looking at the person. And in the physical realm, that client will react. They will often touch the space that the other being has touched or they'll itch it or they'll fan it or they'll look around, and sometimes, most of the time when I ask them, so why did you do that? Because I know why they did it. But often they don't know. Sometimes they don't even know that they moved. You know, they'll brush their face. I'm like, why did you just brush your face? And they're like, oh, I didn't brush my face. I'm like, yes, you did. You literally took your hand and touched your forehead. And like, oh, yeah, I just felt like something touched me there. And I would tell them, well, I can tell you who touched you there. But the reason I'm saying this is very often we get we're interacting with higher realms on a regular basis. We have a physical response, but because we're not educated, we're not aware, we're not open to seeing or in communication with these other realms that interact with us, we are like blind people walking around, and so we come up with reasons to explain away something pretty profound but very subtle. You know, and in that way, so when somebody says to me, you know, oh, I've been feeling dizzy or I've been feeling nauseous, I'm not so quick to dismiss it because there are all kinds of reasons you could be feeling that, you know. But yeah, that's just something that I've seen and experienced.
So, yes, we're bouncing up and down in this gravitational soup, and it's boiling people up because people in general, I hazard a guess to say, are becoming more and more agitated, more and more short of time, short of temper, short of energy, short of sleep, irritable, grumpy, and sometimes they're all right, and sometimes they're not. And I noticed it. And a few years ago, I started looking at what could be a correlate, and I looked at the sun, and I realized that there's a magnetic flux that runs from the sun to the earth, and it has a cycle of about just about a 24-hour cycle. And if people are being sort of irritable, I look at it, and I've now seen a very direct correlation, is that the magnetic field of the planet changes very suddenly, and it disorients people. That, you know, you might be having a conversation and your feelings are magnetic. You're sitting there in that particular little matrix, and then suddenly the field changes suddenly, and essentially it kind of wipes out your memory stick of what you're feeling and what was the story behind it. And you have a whole different story behind it. And, that person has just annoyed or irritated you or said a word that triggers you. And then there's this whole negative spiral and everything blows up. And that's been happening kind of more and more. And I've noticed that these magnetic spikes have increased in intensity until, I think it was the middle of September, they were literally off their chart. You know, I've never seen it leave the chart, but the blue line just went off the top and came back about a day later. So magnetic fluctuations, which is how we're feeling.
Right. It's interesting you mentioned that because, like I mentioned earlier, the sun and the constant stream that we get, it does, affect our not only electromagnetic field of the earth, but directly the human, bioelectric field. And as you said, there's a pretty strong magnetic, component to it, you know. Whereas if the sun is shifting frequencies, and I think we're supposed to be in a solar minimum or something right now, with huge spikes that go on. So it's like, you know, we're getting hit with these waves, boom, 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 right? And our consciousness is used to sort of riding a wave, at, you know, riding the ocean of magnetism, and all of a sudden there's a big spike. Then the human consciousness very often can't deal with it. You know, so we have emotional explosions. We have psychological breakdown. We have physical. There's a friend of mine who every time there's a solar flare, she has panic attacks. She has arrhythmic heartbeats, and you know, she's actually a couple of people I know that have been checked into the hospital because of these shifts in the sun. And I know some people may think about it, so like, no, that never happens, but. But again, if you go back to what I mentioned, where things happen to you and a lot of people don't even realize that it's happening, and for those who do realize, I just did a thing that I have no explanation for, they literally can't tell you why, or they have an explanation. It's not really, it doesn't explain, it doesn't cover, or it doesn't adequately explain why this morning I woke up feeling irritable. Why? They're, you know, in your human five sensual reality, there is no stimulus, there's no reason for it. You really don't know why. But on a higher level, or on a subconscious level, there is a reason. You know, there's also a friend of mine, I've attended a couple of his lectures, Duncan Cameron, talks about upspin and downspin. This guy is really, he's been through the ringer when it comes to, quote unquote government.
This is the guy that sat in the Montauk seat when he was a kid, yeah?
Correct, yeah. He was subject to that Philadelphia experiment thing, and he sat in the Montauk, and he opened a portal, and strange things came through, and, you know, deep, dark.
You know, the id thing.
Yeah, yeah.
The id thing.
So he talks about in his lectures, and I don't want to get too much into it because that's his material, but one of the important things he talks about is there are areas in our immediate field where you have an upspin and a downspin of energy, sort of like a vortex, right? And he often says if you're in a particular, like literal physical space, because he talks a lot about time and space and the traveling through it and how we often pop in and out of time and space and we don't realize, and time streams carrying its own memory, which, you know, you mentioned about a memory stick earlier, I thought was interesting. But he says if you're standing in one particular place and you start to feel bad or you feel like you don't, well, uncomfortable, very likely the energies have shifted and you're standing in what he calls a downspin vortex, which sucks the energy out. And literally all you have to do is take 9 steps in any direction outside of that particular space that you're in, and you will feel a major difference in your energy. And I don't know why 9 steps, but that's his theory, and he's demonstrated it, and apparently it seems to work. So, you know, again, that's just some of the ways that the frequencies play on us human beings without us even realizing it. You know, there's also something to be said about a high concentration of magnetite and some other magnetic reactive minerals and metals that are in our pituitary and our pineal gland. And so when we're in a magnetic field that keeps fluxing about, one can only imagine what that does to your mind, your brain, your state of consciousness, sleep cycles, etc. Yeah.
Sleep cycles. Now, let's talk sleep cycles. Of the people that you've been speaking with. Now, this is another factor in these solar flares, is that it mangles your sleep cycles. Some days, yeah. I can't sleep all the way through. Most of the time, I don't sleep all the way through anymore. I'll sleep for 3 hours, wake up in a sweat, get some more sleep and, wake up again and sometimes it's hard work to get through the night.
Well, I mean, I know a lot of people, when I say a lot, I mean a lot of people who complain in cycles, actually, where, like, they'll be fine, and then within a week, I'll get, you know, 5 or 6, maybe 10 or 15 people that are all like, I can't sleep. And there's no, you know, you ask them, well, you're drinking coffee? What are you doing? Why can't you sleep? They're like, I go to sleep. I have these weird dreams. I can't sleep. I can't get deep into sleep. Sometimes I just can't go to sleep. You know, there are things that are happening to us, in the realm of sleep, as related to the sun. Now, again, I'm no expert, but from my own experience, I've seen where, your pineal gland secretes melatonin, which helps with your sleep cycle, right? Circadian rhythm, right? But if you're exposed to high bursts of energy from the sun, and that's literally what it is, I'll get back to that in a second. Then it can, you know, the pituitary gland has rods and cones that are light sensitive, right? The sun sends you these brilliant shafts of light, on a higher light spectrum. Your pineal gland responds to it, messes with your melatonin production, and there goes your sleep, right? That's one aspect of it. The other aspect of it, you know, people, typical, the layperson will say, well, the sun is very hot. Yes, this is true, but the sun is not necessarily hot because it's a thermonuclear reactor. It's hot as a byproduct of the fact that it's a giant energy ball, and what it sends out more so than heat is energy. Literal energy comes out of the sun, and when it interacts with different surface areas, the energy striking that surface area can react and cause heat in terms of friction and other things. Again, I'm not a scientist, but this is based on the research that I've done. the heat comes in, but what you're being exposed to on a daily basis when you walk around the sun is actual energy. Now, if you get like a huge energy spike from the sun and you are exposed to this energy spike, and I've experienced it myself physically and other people have talked about it, if you get a sudden energy boost and then you try to go to sleep, it's like having, you know, had a couple cups of coffee just before you try to go to bed. It's not going to work, you know, as far as I can tell. And it's happened to me many times. I'm laying there, I'm sweating, because I'm hot, right? And I can't sleep. I'm tossing and turning in the bed. And there's no reason for it. There's no physical stimulus. I didn't eat anything. I didn't do anything different. It's just that particular day or that particular week. I just have a different energy cycle that's causing me to not be able to sleep at night. And that's really the only explanation I can come up with for why people are losing sleep. You know, there are other thoughts, but that's the most plausible one so far.
Well, you know, the idea of having rods and cones in the pineal gland that are receiving, what if they were seeing light on a higher frequency? If they were looking into the ultraviolet band, for instance, or the infrared band, indeed. But probably ultraviolet. What do you think?
Well, I don't know what frequency it looks in, but I do know that according to you know, Taoist and other Eastern philosophies, the light that the pineal gland is most sensitive to is the divine light, the light that comes from source. And I don't know what what frequency that comes down in. But yeah, sure. Why not? Ultraviolet, infrared.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. The frequency that DNA communicates on is an ultraviolet frequency. It's a blue. You know, it looks like electric blue. And, it's that very pleasant blue. Kind of like, you know, the blue of the Star Trek. There's a particular, they have a blue that kind of goes along the sides of the corridors.
The dilithium still blue. No, wait, something else.
That's a plasma blue because it's the plasma conduits.
You know, interesting.
Right? Got it right. That blue is, this comes from David Wilcock's work, which was really interesting a few years ago. It's about, now what is it? I think it's either 435 or 415. Don't quote me. But it's around there. That's the nanometer frequency. And you can actually go along to your, eBay and type in LED, of, that frequency and you can buy some for like half a dollar each and, you know, put them into things and maybe put them into a pair of glasses and see what happens.
Yes, I think that's a great idea. You should do that.
That might be an idea. Well, look, I mean, do you remember I was talking to you about this machine that I made?
Yes.
I've got a, because I had a conversation with my guides, you know, about it. And, they said, why don't you make a website? So I've actually created a website for this thing. And it's cool. I said, well, what do you want to call it? And they said, the Energizer. And I thought, oh, that's a bit corny. That's just like, you know, oh, it's an inner energizer. Oh, I get it. Yeah, ha, ha. So I was really sarky with them. But then I looked up the word to energize, and it literally means to light up your nervous system.
Interesting.
No kidding. I was so kind of, look like a complete egotistical idiot in front of them. So, there we go. We all humble ourselves in front of these things. We're at the, indeed top of the hour. And, I'm going to play a couple of tunes because I want to, get a nice fresh brew of coffee. Ray Rowe from Pinner in London in Middlesex. Suggested that they play this all the way from the 1970s, Rock the Boat by the Hughes Corporation. Yes, indeed. Welcome back. It is now the 23rd of October, 2017. And my guest on Ever Beyond on Wolf Spirit Radio through Ever Beyond Radio is Michael Graham. So good evening, Michael, again. Hello. We've just passed midnight, you see.
Oh, right.
Over here in Blighty.
Yes, the the witching hour.
Yeah. Well, actually, well, the way that hours change, the way that moments change, and again, this is another one of my little themes, is that, I was editing a lot of music and discovered that every 4.5 minutes, the music beat changed. That generally, you know, a good song can't go on longer than 4.5 minutes. And if it does, it generally changes. You know, it's like quite complete. I mean, for instance, it's just bringing up off the top of my head, Layla by, Eric Clapton.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's got that da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, bit. And then after a while, it just drifts into this other very, very dreamy, dreamy piece that is completely unconnected with the first part. It's just like they're two completely different pieces of music that segue just one into the other. And that's one song, because it's long. What do you think of that?
You know, I don't, it's an interesting observation.
It's a bit like getting bored, you know, it's like there's a moment when you think, oh, that's enough.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's something to be said about, you know, there's music as we experience it in modern times versus, I guess, what our natural inclinations would be. A lot of jazz people would be like, no, that's not true. 4 minutes is not nearly long enough for a good piece. Some other pop artists, one of my favorites, Bill Withers, had really long songs sometimes. Based on what I I may be wrong about this, but from what I recall, it was the recording industry that sort of insisted that artists limit their songs to 3.5 to 4 minutes, partially because of limitations of the equipment at the time. And so I think over time we've just become accustomed to listening to 4 minute songs or 3 minute songs, and realizing that they're really good. And I don't think necessarily the time frame is what makes a song good, as it is probably the artist saying, hey, let me play a really good song within this 4 minute window that they've given me, you know.
All right. I agree there. But I just also want to say that some of the great long songs are about 23 minutes long.
Oh.
And that's, you know, fortunately how long one side of an LP record, that's all they could squeeze in, at 33 revolutions a second. But the idea that, do you remember an album used to be 45 minutes long?
Yep.
And it was enough. And it's like, yep, if you have to top it out to an hour, it actually, you know, you're detracting. You have to put some crap in there because there's only good, and again, so it's like another harmonics. Yeah, there's another 45 minutes is another sort of harmonic. 23 minutes is a sort of another. It's like, I call them like an attention span moment, you know. And, for instance, comedy shows. Some comedy shows are only half an hour long, and that's just not long enough. Like Monty Python used to be only half an hour long. And, right. And some comedy shows that are an hour long just seem too long. But a 45 minute one, that's just about right. So.
I mean, you talk about experience and time, and that brings in consciousness, right? I mean, there's that old saying, if you're enjoying what you're doing, then it's never long enough. Time goes by in an instant, right? But if it's really boring or painful, then time drags on really, really slow. So I do think that there's an attention span, relationship with that 4 minute cycle, that 3.5 minute cycle, maybe 4 minute cycle for sure. Because you're right. A lot of the songs that go beyond that, like you said in the Layla song, they tend to shift rhythm. They shift, you know, they go to a bridge or, you know, it becomes a different thing. I remember, one of my favorite pieces is the Dave Brubeck, Green Onions song. I don't know if you're familiar with the Brubeck,
I didn't know Brubeck did a version of that.
You know what? I'm pretty sure.
It was Booker T and the MGs who did the kind of thing.
Could be, but I remember Brubeck. I think I could, you know, I could be like embarrassed.
I'm gonna check this out. Hang on, one moment. You keep telling, tell the story. I'm gonna check it out.
Well, I'm just saying, I'm relating to what you're saying where, you know, they had the green onions and then they had mo onions. Could be Booker T, could be both, you know, it could be a cover, but I remember one piece was relatively long, another piece was short, and I was never long enough because I would just go in the flow and I got lost in that song. It was really, really, really good. But I don't remember the length of the song. But yeah, it's subjective, you know. excuse me. It's subjective. It's, you know, what you're experiencing, determines your perception of the time frame that it's happening. I know people who, just to spin it off a little bit, who have had experiences where they're outside, quote unquote, of time and space. And what they think happens is happening in 5 minutes, goes on for an hour, 2 hours. They're famous sadhus in the East, in India, who've had, I think one of them, his name is Sadhguru Isha, who talks about experiences where he was sitting under a tree and he started to meditate and he sort of drifted off in his meditation. What he thought was, you know, a 10, 15 minute meditation, ended up being a 2 day experience. And he woke up and came back and people had put wreaths of flowers around him and started to worship him at his feet. And he thought it was very, very strange. And I know people who've lost time, myself included, where I'm like, okay, I check the time and I'm like, okay, this is going to take about 5 minutes. And then I look at the time again, 5 minutes later, it's 20 minutes. What happened? You know, time is right. You know, as I say, we're moving out of the third, going to the fourth dimension where time has fourth going into fifth. Time has that different experience. We experience time differently and it's relative and it's based on what and how much of ourselves we immerse into the continuum, right? As they say, time is speeding up. Things that used to happen that take years to happen are happening within weeks, months, or even days. So I know it's not necessarily related to your 4 minute cycle, but I think it's an interesting topic, time versus perception. Then of course you can go into the whole quantum theory thing, which I'm not going to do because that's a whole spooky action at distance, confusing topic that I'm not even going to pretend to know anything about. But you're interested.
So we won't talk about Red Mercury.
Oh, Red Mercury. it was the what is that? The Glocker.
Yeah, the fuel for the Glocker.
It's interesting.
Go ahead.
Just the thing, I've been really getting into some of the ancient texts and they talk about the Vimanas, right? And, apparently the Vimanas, which were thousands of years ago, you know, way, way, way back in the BC, where there was some of the Vedic Puranas, the sacred texts, of India, describe in great detail how to build a Vimana, which the Vimana, for those who don't know, is a flying vehicle, usually a chariot of the gods. And one of the things that they say fuel the Vimana is mercury. I don't know if it's red mercury, but they do say that mercury and mercury vapor is a fuel for some of these flying craft. The pieces that describe how that works have been removed from what I gather, but it's an interesting segue.
Yeah,
but,
that's where the Vatican Library comes in.
Oh. Of course,
because that's exactly where, because yeah. They have, you know, all this all the secret space program is, you know, it's not like the Vatican doesn't know about it.
Yeah, well,
you know,
the Vatican knows about it. The Vatican knows some of the ancient texts that describe the ancient gods as extraterrestrials. So naturally, they'd be connected to the secret space program exactly. And multidimensional beings that come in and mess around with humanity. And our history is rife with intervention from different species that come and go and play God and play Savior and so on and so forth. So yeah, I don't, you know, that's a whole part of history I never really got into, the whole, the bell and the time machine. Most of what I know about it, interestingly enough, came from you, JP, when I listened to your shows earlier when you talked about the Glocker and, the spies that went forth and back and so on and so forth.
I mean, it's a very pivotal time, I believe, for humanity, and nobody knows about it. It's like Well, it's like most of the things that have happened behind humanity's back. We're finding finding out about it now, but we never knew it at the time. It's like, who knew about the Manhattan Project? Obviously, if they had Facebook and Twitter these days, those days, would we have known about the Manhattan Project and things like that?
Hmm.
I mean, it's something to think about, because there are things that are still held secret. Still these days.
I wanna just a quick moment, shout out to, all my, Hindu, Indian folks out there who are celebrating Diwali right now, sacred celebration, festival of lights in the Skanda Shasti, yet another,
isn't that interesting? Cause this evening, I, went up to my mantelpiece and I lit three candles in front of my statue of Shiva.
Oh, perfect. Well, there you go. Shiva is a wonderful manifestation of the Eastern concept of the Christ mind, right? Some would argue with me about that, but that's what I've concluded. Diwali has more to do with the festival. I mean, well, all of them are included in this celebration, but specifically the Divine Mother and the fight she had with the negative being, the demon, and so on and so forth. But around the same time, there's this Skanda Shasti. He's an incarnation of Shiva, or more specifically, a son of Shiva. And he's a famous warrior that also, you know, defeated the ego and brings enlightenment to the conscious mind. So, I just, wanted to say and acknowledge that. But cool, yeah, I gotta light some candles myself. Got a bunch of them.
How interesting. I was just like, you know, I thought, oh, let's light a few candles. Isn't that funny how you do these things? Yeah.
Mm. Makes you wonder where you got the inspiration to do that, is it?
Exactly. It's just like, I mean, I do a show on Mondays called The Andronicus Transmissions. Mm-hmm. And, everything that I do in the daytime, like, to me, the afternoon is in the few hours before the show, everything has some kind of relationship to the show itself, to the content of the show, what people are saying, the kind of connections that might have, or stories that might arise. It's a very strange thing. It's strangely, surprisingly, delightfully nice.
Yeah, well, you're in that synchronistic flow where everything happens in relationship to the main thing. So the question is, where and how are you being influenced? Is it a divine source? That's your guides that are coming in. They're leaving the jukebox and coming over and sort of whispering in your ear. Or some would say, are you immersed in the arduous frequency that creates certain patterns of behavior, just like the cymatic shape manifests spontaneously? Are you following along with the higher frequency impressing upon your consciousness that's sort of causing you to do certain things?
I'm being a plasma ball.
There you go. You're being a plasma ball. You're being directed, right? Subconscious and higher consciousness, right? Which is an amazing thing about the higher realms. We are influenced far more by external forces than we realize. There's a famous I like to talk about this famous study that was, well, I don't know the actual name of the study, but in Malcolm Gladwell's lots of his books, specifically Blink, talks about how the human being, the human consciousness, reacts to stimuli before the advent of the stimulus, meaning our bodies and our minds start to react to a thing happening within the split seconds before the actual happening of the thing. And so the scientists and psychologists are wondering what and how is that possible. There are examples of how our subconscious mind can heavily influence our conscious mind, without us realizing we're being influenced by the subconscious mind, where there are machines that they attach to a person's, head that stimulate certain nerves that cause the arm to move and the leg to move. And the person who experiences it, they report, well, I felt like I wanted to move my arm. when in fact the impulse was coming from an external source that said, move your arm. But the brain rationalizes it in the absence of knowledge. It rationalizes it and says, well, surely I must have wanted to move my arm. It rationalizes after the fact. Excuse me. And so you are, unless somebody told you, hey, there's a machine connected to your head that's moving your arms, you would think you just moved your arms, but you can't figure out why. And then, of course, we come up with reasons. There's a example where someone was hypnotized. They were hypnotized and were given a suggestion, your pants are made of coarse and very, very itchy wool. And they were brought out of hypnosis. And the person eventually started to itch. And, they were inexplicably itchy and very uncomfortable. And when asked, why are you itching? They're like, I'm not sure. I feel like my pants are itching me and I just need to get out of them. Maybe there's something going on with the fabric softener. Maybe the temperature has shifted. So their brain starts to rationalize the impulse, because it doesn't know where the impulse came from, at least their conscious mind, right? This is sort of a very long diatribe on how we're influenced, but I guess I'm just trying to make a point. How often we react to stimulus out of ignorance and our brains rationalize it, so we can stay within the reality that we've created, sort of our 3D ignorance.
Yeah. I remember waking up in hospital, thinking that I had a particular purpose there. Not that I had a crash. I was doing this for a reason. my mind made up this reason. Oh, I was a journalist. Oh, really? Oh, I'm a journalist. Oh, well, I'm a journalist. No, I wasn't a journalist at the time. Anyway, long story. So, when you do readings for people, what is your, what's your approach?
Like I said, my purpose is to, observe, to look and see which guides are there, primarily starting with the angels. What kind of relationship the client has with the angel or the guide, and work them through, clearing blocks that prevent them from connecting on a deeper level with their guides. And so my approach is very often I go into an altered state, not like a trance, but sort of like, you know, a meditative state where I block out all the stimulus and I try to observe as much as I can on the higher realms. And I look around the person and I just see, hey, where's the guide? And based on the proximity to them, it gives me an idea, how close they are literally to this being. I walk them through, I give them exercises, and it's sort of intentional based, where a lot of what happens in those realms are based on the intention that you set. If you hold a strong intention, it manifests. And so we go through intention exercises to establish a stronger, closer, cleaner relationship with the beings that are meant to guide us in life. And often I'll see beings that are not meant to be there. And so I'll go through a process and get rid of them, and clear them out of that person's energy field.
That's interesting. What do you need? Do you need to, be there in person? Can you do it over Skype? Can you do it with audio over the telephone?
I do it. Usually, the vast majority of that kind of work that I do is over the phone. It's remotely done. I never need to be in person. The only time I go in person is if I need to do some kind of energy work based on the different modalities that I've used. Some of them are hands-on. You need to be physically there. But for this kind of work, I do it over the phone. I do it over Skype. Because, you know, you go into those realms, there's no time and space. There's no distance. You know, I can be right there next to a person and walk around their room. And sometimes I'm able to tell them, hey, in the back corner there's a thing. You got to get rid of it, you know, or, you know, you got to clean up this space over here because the energy just looks wrong. And then I can, you know, I talk to their guide. Sometimes messages come through. Sometimes I get to ask questions.
Oh, cool.
But, yeah, I go to them sort of astrally, or not astrally, but on a soul level.
Okay, could you do that now with me?
See, no.
Oh, right, okay.
actually, I, I could, but it would take us about 45 minutes because I go through a very strict protocol of clearing my energy and shifting my mind, so that when I see things, I'm seeing it as clearly and as precisely as possible with as little influence and interference, as possible. The whole process takes about an hour. With much of it going through, because you know there are people who start and they go in and they start to read, and sometimes they get interference and they're not necessarily as clean going in as they need to be. And if you're not clean enough, you can bring things with you, or it can affect the quality of what you're perceiving.
All right.
I could take a look, you know.
Go on. Do you want me to turn my camera on?
No, that's right. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. I know your energy. Let's see. Oh man, now my cat's getting all active.
Well, she
jumped off the bed and now she's sitting right on, no, you can't bite me. What are you doing? She's
maybe she's saying don't do that.
She's trying to get my lap right. That's usually a sign, but, okay. Hang on. Mm. So yeah, I'm going to be quiet for a couple of minutes just so I can shift.
Thank you, Kitty.
Yeah, she's scratching the back of my chair. Come here. I gotta sit there for a while. Immediately what I see is you've got behind you, they're very, very powerful, very bright light beings. You've got some, and they're all clustered behind you to the left, right? I feel like they're more Ascended Master / ET. There is at least one angel. Wait a minute. You've got a cluster of angels that you don't really interact with, but there's one in particular who is, there's one guide, I would say maybe your main guide. I'm not seeing them very clearly, which means these are beings that I don't work with very regularly. One is there's a man who has a very interesting swagger, very sort of, Han Solo kind of characteristic. But no, these are very high level beings. These are, I would say even like, we're going up into like the higher dimensions of like 10, maybe 11th dimension. They help to set up the whole game of the evolutionary process of humanity. I hesitate to use the word founders, but I would say similar to them.
So what are they wanting with little old me?
Well, so I feel like you're, I don't know if anybody's ever done this with you, but you've got a strong presence in like the sixth dimension. So from what I gather, there was a descent. These beings decided that they wanted it was time that the Earth and its population went through a shift, and they descended from their high perch, in the higher realms, the higher aeons, and came down, and you volunteered as an emissary on behalf of their grand plan to come in and not necessarily to be an active principal so much as to be a channel for a very particular kind of frequency that they want to have grounded here on the earth. That's one of the main reasons. And why did you volunteer?
Because I'm a bloody idiot? No.
No. From what they're saying, it's you had the most karma to clear, so it's a win-win, right?
I see. So I could get on the good side again.
Yeah, you like, listen, I need to get back there to do some work anyway, you know, and not only do you have that karma to clear, but the boon or the benefit is once you complete your mission, you get to like jump to even higher dimensions a lot faster than you would have having not incarnated.
Like stretching the elastic back. And how am I doing with the whole karma business? You know, sort of more than 75%, more than 80%, you know, how much have I got to go?
Let's see.
Presuming that I don't create any more in the meantime.
Well, I was about to say, surprisingly, okay, so what I'm getting is a lot of the karmic baggage you came with has been dumped, and there has been a shield, a karmic shield put around you. So the karma that you normally would incur is the majority of it slides off. That's the term I'm being shown, slides off, water off a duck's back. So you only get to carry maybe 10% of the karma that you would normally, let's say you incur about 40% of karma. The rest of it gets neutralized based on, I guess, you know, higher dimensional protocols. I don't know how that works. But you're only stuck with 10%. So you're not incurring as much as you think. You still got some work to do, in terms of clearing it. Near the end of your incarnation, I gather that there's going to be a big, flushing of their karma. But in terms of, there are concepts, right? Concepts specifically, okay, you know, I do this sometimes. I get so much information all at the same time. It's like a whole fully formed idea, and I'm trying to put it into words. Right?
Yeah, I'm picking up on the edge of that. Keep going. It's beautiful.
Right. So there are concepts that you have yet to bring out. And when I say concepts, I mean complex concepts having to do not only with with frequency technology, not necessarily electronic, but frequency technology, but also concepts related to human society, all right, that are sort of lurking in the top regions of your consciousness, that some of it you've got insights into, and you're like, no, I need to think about this some more because that's too complicated. Yeah, I guess I am speaking very abstractly because I'm not getting concrete as to.
That's
as to
fine. I get you. Is it like in terms of how people should live together, like a community
or
non-corporate structured universe, for instance?
Yes, but not just community. Yes, community, but certain principles from this community can be applied globally. Not all of it, because some of it is regional and some of it, quite frankly, just won't work. But some of these concepts are very important to be integrated into the coming global village that we're moving into when paradigms break down and people start to look for alternatives to integrate into a new concept of self-governance.
Brilliant. Right. Keep going. That's the new paradigm workers. We'll talk about that.
Right. Yeah, these are important things as a way station. As a way station on the journey of enlightenment for humanity. there's the stage of, okay, we're shifting out of the old literal and figurative draconian hierarchical structure that we've been subject to for so long, and we're moving into newer concepts of living as a global people. But that's not the stopping point. That's not even, that's just a temporary blip on the path to an enlightened society, similar to the Arcturians, where everyone there is enlightened. They don't need a king. Everybody knows exactly what they're supposed to do because they don't need anybody to tell them what to do, because they all have, you know, what I like to call the great Christ mind, which, you know, probably has a different name, but that's essentially the same thing. And that's kind of where we're going. And as we get to that place, we become governors not only of the planet, but also of the sector. I'm being told sector. What does that mean? What do you mean sector?
It's the area of space. It's like beyond our solar system, Alcyone and the Pleiades. You know, like the part that includes Orion and, you know, all Orion and Lyra and all our local neighbors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You don't work with your angels much, JP.
Are they missing me?
Well, do you ever watch American wrestling?
No. I don't even watch English wrestling.
Okay. So there's, I'll try to explain. So in American dramatized wrestling, you know, entertainment, WCW, WWF kind of wrestling, there is the concept of the tag team, where one guy is in the ring and he's doing his thing, and he's supposed to at some point tag his partner, and then his partner is supposed to come in, he leaves the ring, or sometimes they're able to double team their opponent and work together to defeat and win the match, blah, 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 right? But the rule is that tag team partner cannot come into the ring until they're tagged. And sometimes the drama comes in. You'll see the tag team partner reaching across the ring and screaming, hey, tag me, because he realizes his partner's getting his ass beat. His buttocks. Whooped. Right?
It's okay. You can speak your mind.
And of course, having been tagged in, he gets the experience of being in a match, and he gets credit for helping you overcome, blah, 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 blah. So your angels, in your particular case, are like these tag team guys. They're sitting on the periphery. They're like, he's ignoring us again, you know? And they're like, you know, JP, we could totally help you with that, but you're just not even paying attention. That thing we're struggling with, we're supposed to help you with it. You're not supposed to do it on your own. He's not listening. He's not listening again, kind of thing. This is a conversation you're having that I'm repeating, right? So tag your angels. And they'll come in and make things smoother, right? They'll help you, miraculously, as is their forte, to make things happen in your life, easily, pleasantly, and they'll help to defend you against interference, right? They won't necessarily stick around. They'll come and go, but you have to, and by tagging them, pretty much you just set the intention, talk to them, say, all right, come on in, guys. I accept your help. I open up to your assistance. They're assigned to you from Creator as your eternal helpers, right? So they're there for a purpose, and they're kind of like, they do come in and interact. I'm told that there are times when they're like, okay, he doesn't know, but we're just gonna step in here and you know, block this meteor that's heading towards his head, kind of thing, and then step back. Those are preordained moments when the rule of sovereignty, free will, is overridden because of a higher order of protection, right? But for the most part, they cannot interfere unless you call on them. And they're a separate order of beings than the ETs. A lot of people say angels are ETs. No, they're not. They're specific, created beings, from Creator Source that are meant to help us on a soul evolution. Their agenda is to help us evolve as a soul being and to get to our highest place so that we can return to Creator with our evolved self and, you know, deposit our experiences there, whereas a lot of these ETs, they have a different agenda, whether it be benevolent, you know, they're trying to see us get to a place, but as a soul level, no, they're not doing the same thing that the angels do.
Okay. Tag. So again, Saffron 4314 in the question in the chat room says, how can you tag your angels if you don't even know that they're there?
Know that they're there. It's a given fact. You have an arm, you know that your arm is there. Well, okay, let's put it this way. How do I put it? You came in with certain things as a human being. You came in with a body, you came in with a mind, you came in with feelings, you came in with angels. Our Western society often don't teach us about our relationship with them. So you knowing that they're there, or sort of saying to yourself that you know that your angels are there, open doors for them to step in and actively interact in your life. Knowing that they're there and then setting an intention for having them come in and work with you according to your highest good and according to your soul's plan, that's all you need for tagging, in terms of that's how you tag them. You tell them, you set the intention, or you can pray to source, whatever your interpretation of God is. You pray to source and say, okay, fine, I would like to have my angels play more or a stronger role in my life. And he will, you know, he, she will have them come into your energy field in a closer way. That's one way to do it, or a couple ways, actually.
Thank you. That's how to do it. So, understanding that I've always tried to leave a gap so that randomness can enter, so that angels can speak to me. Mm-hmm. I try not to plan everything moment to moment, so that there are gaps. That's what I mean. Where, you know, a higher dimensional can speak to me in some higher dimensional way, you know, maybe even it's just the way the fire is crackling in response mm-hmm. to how I'm speaking. But it just definitely, you know, even your phone bleeps at the certain time when you're just talking to it. So I hope that, that's helped.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when you make space, You allow space for the divine to act in your life. That's often good enough. And in your particular case, I mean, part of the reason you don't, well, what I gather, part of the reason you don't necessarily work with the angels, because you're not necessarily, you have a, what is it, your concepts of who they are, you're not really clear about that. So there's a part of you that keeps them at arm's length, to an extent. And also you're more comfortable working in a particular frequency with other guides, and that's fine. But it's important to bring in all your tools, right? And you have your full arsenal available to you. And that being, and when you have your full complement of beings that are meant to help you, you become much more consciously aware and powerful. It's like, how do you put it? You know how when you're in that space between sleeping and waking, and your consciousness accepts certain things as reality, like, you know, in that dream state, you're like, sure, the bed is floating in an ocean, and, you know, that's normal. And then when you wake up, you're like, what? That doesn't make any sense whatsoever. The bed is not floating in an ocean. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah. It's normal. Wherever you are, it's the normal thing.
Right. Where your consciousness is, certain things, it's just a level of, you're able to perceive and grok or process information at a certain level, right? Having your angels come in to complement your consciousness, it's like waking up to a higher level of being, and all of a sudden, things that used to make sense, you see the folly of them, and then new things start to make sense. You become aware of new concepts or higher concepts that you just were not aware of before. Like, you can't drive a car when you're dreaming. It's just not going to happen. But when you're awake, you can totally drive a car. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right. So that's one reason you probably want to work on that.
So, talking with my angel and letting, you know, listening to them, and do angels, here's the thing. Now, this is a weird way of putting it, but I can't find another way of putting it. I'm going to use a verb that is the name of the film, right? Do angels ever avatar humans? Do you understand what I mean? Like to step inside their body,
yes,
and drive them and like make them turn right instead of turning left.
Yeah.
Saves their life and stuff.
Absolutely. They can embody or overlight you and make you do things. There are people who've been able to achieve tremendous feats of impossibility. You know, that famous story about the woman lifting the car off of her child and the man climbing up a sheer cliff without realizing he did it. And you know, all these amazing feats occur because your angels can give you the power or overlight you or step into you, so to speak, and empower you to do certain things, all in alignment with what's for your highest good, in alignment with divine will, as opposed to negative beings. They sort of come in and they want to do their own thing, or they don't want to leave. But the angels come and then they leave. Once they're done, they go away. But not only, so in that way, they quote unquote avatar body, but not only do they step in sometimes to help, whether immediately beside you or within you, they're also known to incarnate physically as a human being for different lengths of time, whether it be to be born as a human, to live a human incarnation in order to anchor certain energies or fulfill a purpose, or to just physically create a body in that moment to fulfill a particular purpose, and they dissolve and leave. There's a famous Christian Bible reference that talks about, be mindful of who you're entertained, because by so doing, you are in the company of angels unawares, right? So you never know, a person who comes around the corner and gives you exactly the thing you need in that particular moment, or tells you, hey, don't go there in that particular moment, may actually be an incarnated angel that just took a body to do precisely that and then leave. Happens.
You know, when I need something done, you know, say there's something up with my electricity or my telephone and I need to talk to someone on one of those horrible things, what they call them, the call centers. And you know that you're gonna have a language problem. I always ask, can I speak to the angels? Can I, you know, in every one of these companies, there's an angel, I believe. I'm down with you. Yeah. Cause in every one of these companies, there's an angel, and you just need to find the angel in the building, you know, and it could be a police station, but
yeah,
you will recognize them and things are going to be all right. I really more than have faith or believe that. That's experience.
I mean, that happens quite often. From an angelic perspective, often what will happen is the angel will come in and influence that particular person that you're working with. Remember, we talked earlier about unseen influences, right? They will influence that person to make sure that you have a wonderful experience, right? They'll come in, they'll implant, they'll suggest thoughts, or just being in the presence of an angel, your entire energy field shifts. You become much more pleasant, much more loving, sometimes much more, amorous or even funny, you know, humorous. And you have ideas flow in an amazing way. And, you know, have you ever had a situation where you call and the particular agent is like, I'm sorry, we can't help with that particular thing. And then they go silent. And then they're like, you know what? There is something I can do. And they're working quietly in the background and boom, 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 boom. Next thing you know, not only is your problem solved, but you ended up coming out even better than you thought. I don't know if that happened to you. It happened to me quite often. Right.
Exactly.
Right, those moments can be angelic intervention. Some people have a powerful retinue that accompany them. Ascended masters do the same thing. Elementals do the same thing. Sometimes even power animals do the same thing. But they don't quite have the same effect, I think, as angels do. It's much more powerful, much more direct. But there's always a sense of pleasantness and a sense of beautiful, peaceful, loving bliss that accompanies angels that won't necessarily accompany some of these other beings.
Very interesting. So we have a question from Lotus Eaters. Hi, all the way from England. Can I ask Michael a difficult question? What about people who have become addicted to drugs, or who die prematurely, or take their own life, or who abuse as children? Have their angels been blocked from intervening? Yeah, what's the deal? You know, how come people suffer like that? So
it's the free will rule, the law of non-interference, according to a divine edict. We are one of the things that Western theology, Western religion have taught us is that we only have one life, and we don't. Granted, each life, each incarnation is precious, extremely precious, and you want to maximize it as much as possible. As my Swami, Sri Kalishwar, used to say, you know, life is short, make it sweet. But you don't have one incarnation, and we are left here many times we're being asked to grow up and handle our own issues. We're being asked to learn our lessons, overcome certain challenges for ourselves. We can't have anyone do it for us, because if we do it ourselves, we grow and we become masters. If other people do it for us, then we don't grow. We don't become masters. Now, in terms of horrible things that happen to people, very often it's a free will choice, usually because of ignorance, which is, again, an interference pattern that happened with us long ago, again, because of a free will choice that humanity made collectively. So we get into drugs. Which distort the communication between us and our guides, or open portals for negative people and negative influences to come in. People become abusers because very often they are inhabited by negative beings or being influenced by negative beings, largely because of free will choice to, not all the time, but very often, because they themselves have aligned their consciousness with a certain kind of negativity. They harbor anger, they harbor resentment, they harbor jealousy. They let it live within them. It festers, it grows, and it creates a magnet that attracts negativity that actively manipulates and multiplies the negativity within you, so that they can set up a shop for all their buddies to come in and make you even worse over time. So no, the angel doesn't go away. It's waiting for you to say, hey, come help me. But it's not allowed to interfere unless you make a choice, and your choices are recognized by the universe based on, the actions you choose to do, whatever energy you choose to hold. I don't know if that answers your question, but that's kind of a short, summary as to why sometimes these things happen. Also, just to add to that, you know, some people are innocent and naive, and they are targeted. Unfortunately, they are targeted, and so they're taken advantage of, because we have forces that are trying to retard the evolution of humanity. And if you happen to be one of those people who have a great potential to make a big difference in the positive evolution of humanity, you'll be targeted. And if you're not properly aware of how these things work, and if you don't have a strong defense, you can be, you know, hijacked, so to speak.
Very interesting. So here's another question that I often ask myself: how do I know that the communications that I'm having with my guides is not some guy in a CIA tower with a microphone or in a van somewhere?
Yeah, that's the tricky one, right? That is the challenge. It has to do with discernment. If you work with angelic beings, let's put it this way, negativity has no interest in engendering feelings of love, warm altruism towards your fellow man. This is precisely the opposite of what they're trying to do, because that kind of energy weakens them. Why then would they cause you to feel these feelings if it's going to deplete their own energy and drive them away? So that's one surefire sign. If the things you're being asked to do, or the feeling you have when you're in the presence of some of these different beings, is something other than an enlightened feeling of love whether to yourself or to humanity, or an excited feeling of purpose where you feel like what you're going to do will benefit people, then I would question who it is that you're interacting with, and why you are being told or asked or guided to do certain things. That's one of the markers. It helps to develop a close relationship with beings that make you feel that way. And the intention, again, the world and the universe responds to your intention. If your intention is to work with the highest good, with the highest beings, then there are a marshal or a whole fleet of beings who will come in and defend your intention to make sure that you, in fact, connect with beings that are aligned with your highest good and highest positivity, right? The will of the universe sort of bends around it, so to speak.
So, I always found that the communications with my guides had a certain sense of humor that was a little like my sense of humor. And it's a bit funny when it's kind of turned on you. Oh, that's how it makes you feel. All right. Okay. It's often a great way in to your consciousness to tell things as humor, or even to do them as poetry, because that slips in well too.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Poetry is another form of beauty, right? And humor is another form of beauty. And in fact, you know, a lot of people will say, yeah, my guys have a particular personality trait that I find, I reflect, and it's not coincidental. It's by design. Your guides are aligned with you energetically. And so, who reflects whom? Are you reflecting your guides, or are they reflecting you, or, you know, what is it in the chicken and egg situation, right? So, yeah, you know, I work with Archangel Michael a lot. And he, you know, he reflects parts of my personality. He's very serious. He's very, focused and you know, about business, like, let's get this done. And, you know, very, very powerful being. He can just sort of wade into battle and decimate, quote unquote, negative forces. But at the same time, you know, he's a royal stature. He stands very powerfully. And you look at him, you get the distinct impression that he's not one that's going to be laughing around. And I'm sorry, joking around, right? But on occasion, he will deliberately do something completely wacky and off the wall that cracks me up, that makes me realize, wait a minute, you know, not only is humor important to angels, but even though he seems very serious, he channels and he's able to embody blissful, joyful, humor, which, you know, to a lesser extent, is a little bit like my personality. I can be very serious and focused and, you know, about business, and then spontaneously I do something completely off the wall and wacky, and, you know, cracks up my kids, and they're like, you know, they love it. But yeah, this is just an example. You know, I've seen, I'll give you an example. Like, Michael will be standing there, and he's got that penitent, you know, serious look of, I see you to the very core of your being, and I know that dark thing that you're trying to hide, and you can't hide it from me, human. And, you know, I kind of wilt in his gaze, and then all of a sudden he'll whip out a guitar and he'll start to play music, you know, and that's, and he'll play like a classic rock song. And I'm like, that's so uncharacteristic of the Michael that I know. But his whole message in that instance is, you know, don't take it so seriously. It's okay.
Yeah, I can imagine Michael playing guitar. No problem. If it wasn't for UPS, he would be playing it. Anyway, so we're just coming up to the top of the show. Excellent chat, Michael. How do people get in touch with you?
I have a website that I never advertise, but I'll just say it here. It's michaelsrighthand.com, www.michaelsrighthand.com. You can go there, read up on who I am, what I do, and there's a contact me part, and it's got my services, you know, if you want to. I'm going to create a Facebook page because I have a lot of friends that are past clients or current clients, and I'm going to sort of push them off to that Michael's Right Hand Facebook page at some point. So you can watch out for that also. I'm going to put that up soon. Yeah, you can reach me there.
Excellent. So, thank you very much, Michael Graham. It's been a real blast. Thank you for the mini reading. If people would like some such communication and reconnection, just get in touch with Michael. So now, where is the? This is where I say, where's the end of my show? There it is. There's the little tuning. There we go. Stop recording after that. There we go. This has been Ever Beyond. Thank you very much, Michael Grant. Good night.
All right. Thanks. Good night.